FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's the last day of May in 2017. This year is slipping by, and so are the economies of the world. And with us to opine is Andrew Hoffman of MilesFranklin.com. Just for future reference, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. As we look at the U.S. dollar index and interest rates at post-election lows as we speak, oh, God forbid the NASDAQ is down. The economic data is horrible. And, you know, it's funny. I saw this morning, I look at everything on Zero Hedge, and it says European economic sentiment slightly declines from decade highs. And I'm going, wait, you're telling me they just had a 10-year high in sentiment in Europe? I mean, we're talking about the French, you know, they had the two non-mainstream politicians going at it. In Italy, they're about to have these elections that are going to take the country down. Catalonia is threatening to secede from Spain by the fall. Greece is threatening to default any minute. I mean, all these things are going on. And you're saying that this, again, this soft data, it was saying that last month was the highest sentiment in Europe in a decade. I mean, they must have had some pretty poor sentiment if that's the highest. But again, when you talk about these soft data indicators, and I've talked about them forever. I wrote an article maybe 2 or 3 years ago about the Philly Fed Index, which I called the lie to end all lies, because, you know, 1 month it just went from 40 to 70 for no reason. And of course, it plunged right back. But the fact is, the same thing happened with these confidence indexes here in the United States when Trump got elected. Everyone's so excited because he says there's going to be tax cuts. I remember sitting in the locker room in my gym a few weeks ago when they were just coming out with the talk about tax cuts. And there's a guy, I know he's a doctor, because I can hear what he's talking about. And you can just tell he's so clueless about everything. He's going to his friend, hey, I hear Trump wants to lower the corporate tax a lot. That will really help me. And I'm going, you're an idiot. There's not going to be any corporate taxes to lower. And anything they take in one place, they'll give it back in another place. And they have to monetize it, you know, with all the fiscal deficits that would come about because of it. And the point is, people in general are just clueless. And the only thing that separates us from I said we're in dot-com valuations in a Great Depression era. The only thing that separates the entire world from something far worse than 2008 that's irreversible is the manipulated markets. And as I wrote last week, I wrote an article that says historic market manipulation setting the stage for catastrophe. Look, in a lot of the world, we've already seen currencies crashing, all kinds of economic indicators crashing. That's why you're having the social revolutions, the political revolutions. Sure. But all that remains are, as I wrote years ago, last to go markets like the Dow Jones Propaganda Average and paper, gold and silver, because everywhere else across the world, the hard data is crashing and even the soft data is starting to come down. And I think that you're really going to, you know, anyone who thinks you can avoid reality simply because a couple of markets are held up. I mean, I read today, okay, I'm on a rant here. If you could believe this, the ECB, which now has a balance sheet as big as the Fed, you know, $4+ trillion, they now want to securitize and sell the sovereign bonds on their balance sheet to investors, okay? So they propped up prices, basically took interest rates negative. So they took the sovereign bonds of completely bankrupt nations to the highest ever valuations, the point where you even have negative interest rates. And now they want to package them and sell them to retail investors. I mean, you can't make up how dysfunctional and the entire system has become and how it's going to collapse miserably and spectacularly at some point in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we keep getting closer and closer to the day of reckoning, Andy, but it seems to never come.
Oh, my God. That's what I was writing about today. And I was talking about my wife last night about how it's unbelievable how what's happened in the past 5 or 10 years. I mean, to think that the U.S. is, again, theoretically in almost the second longest expansion of the 147 expansions in the nation's 240-year history. And it's one where it's not even an expansion. I mean, on most critical, you know, most empirical data, it's actually worse now than it was 10 years ago. But because they simply lie and say, yes, it's everything is growing, then people believe it. And that the fact that the valuations on the stock market are exceeding the dot-com valuation. Does anyone remember the dot-com time? This was a time of whether it was fake growth or not, literally the best time of prosperity and excitement and happiness and GDP growth in like U.S. history. And we have valuations that exceed that now at a time where you have the worst economic data. I mean, it is the worst decade of GDP growth in U.S. history. It's getting worse. I mean, last quarter was worse, right? The quarter before it was just as bad. The one now is going to be just as bad. So again, you know, we're talking about the gross misallocations of capital, of sentiment, of the political structure, of the financial institutions. Think about the fact that the NASDAQ, for all its record gains, right? Half of the gains, at least, are due to five stocks. And you know who are like who's the biggest holder of those five stocks? The Swiss National Bank. So we're talking about banks are now telling you we are the biggest holders of stocks. The Japanese it was 2 years ago when the Japanese passed more than half of the ETF holdings in the entire country. What do they have now? Three quarters? I mean, at some point, do the Japanese central bank own every stock in the country? I mean, how are they going to make prices going to go up? Are they just going to wash trade with themselves at higher levels? Again, Ponzi schemes can only go up for so long. And everything we see in the economy is a Ponzi scheme right now. Everything the government does, everything in the financial markets, and everything that's paper related. Anything that's real is in big, big trouble. You look at the oil markets. Again, I have been talking more than any single person on the planet for the past year and a half about the OPEC production cut. I worked this for 10 years as an oil analyst on Wall Street at Solomon Smith Barney. I know all about OPEC. OPEC meetings were just like Fed meetings for me for 10 years. And I watched them lose their ability to control the markets for a long, long time now, especially now that you have all this new technology that allows a lot more oil like the shale to come out and a lot in different parts of the world. And I've said from the beginning that the OPEC deal was a sham. And the only reason that they did it is because they're desperate to prevent the entire Middle Eastern economy from collapsing, starting with Saudi Arabia. And I said a year ago when oil prices went down to $30 a barrel, and I saw prices mysteriously start rising every day in the same kind of way as the Dow, I said, I guarantee you there's an oil PPT there, and I guarantee you it's the U.S. government that's behind it trying to prop up prices because they're trying to prop up their buddy Saudi Arabia, which Donald Trump went disgustingly feted last week, and it's not working. Saudi Arabia's cash, we just learned last week, is free falling even at $50 a barrel. And now this last desperation production cut, which has been cheated on by half the countries inside of the deal and outside of the deal, and all the non-OPEC production that's not part of the deal has been surging like the shale, completely collapsing. And that's why oil is falling apart here. And don't be surprised if oil is below $40 in the next few months. And trust me, below $40 is as big of an event as a real estate crash in the United States like circa 10 years ago, because all of the debt that's been built up in the energy sector, almost all of it because of the misallocation of capital caused by central banks like the Federal Reserve. Massive, massive event that's been under the radar and is about to become right on the radar. And conversely, you look at the gold and silver markets, which are physical markets for all the paper naked shorting that's been going on. And what has happened? The exact opposite. Unlike all the other commodities like copper and wheat and oil, which are struggling with massive overcapacity and oversupply, we are talking about reserves have been falling in the gold and silver sector for years. I mean, I can't remember that. I can't find that chart showing. I think the reserves in the gold mining industry are down like 25% in the last 5 or 10 years. And the production is in free fall. Both metals in gold, it's predicted now that production will fall by about 25% in the next 8 to 10 years in gold. 25%. I mean, can you imagine that? This is at a time where central banks are going to be printing into oblivion, and we're going to have a 25% drop in the only asset that's ever been known to protect you from printing into oblivion. And the same goes for silver. And silver is going to get the double barreled boost from the fact that you have all of this oversupply in copper and lead and zinc, which is where most of the silver comes from. So their silver production also peaked in 2015. And just as this, you know, all these shenanigans to try to prop up the economy with markets fail, and everyone really sees how bad it is, and the Chinese bubble really bursts, and there's a massive oversupply of copper and lead and zinc, they're going to shut down every base metal mine there is, and that's going to contribute further to the decline in silver production. So again, I wrote this article two or three years ago called The Direst Prediction of All, and I based it on David Stockman's amazing Great Deformation book, saying all of the capital misallocation because of all the money printing and market manipulation over the years is going to come home to roost in the commodity markets. And that's exactly what you're going to see, what you're seeing right now, and what you're going to see in 2008 style fashion in the coming years.
Wow. Well, that's a lot to digest in one sitting here, Andy, but it's not anything we weren't aware of and haven't expected for a while. It's just eventually it has to happen.
Yeah, and things take time. We talked about how the frustration of the gold and silver sector, And that's why I wrote about today. I said gold. My article was gold, the ultimate buy and hold. If you don't own paper PM investments, you know, like mining shares and ETFs, which, you know, can be naked shorted and you can sell them with the click of a mouse. If you just sit and hold and you wait, then eventually these things happen for all the people. The record long position. I mean, think about it. Wall Street had a record long position in crude oil up until maybe a few weeks ago. While I was telling everyone oil is going to crash, they had a record short position in treasury bonds, listening to all the BS about the Fed's going to raise rates. They're going to shrink their balance sheet. And I wrote back in early January, 2.5% nuff said. I wrote back in January of 2014, right at the top, I wrote 3% nuff said. I said the 10-year yield will never get above 3% because it'll destroy the world. And I said in January, it'll never get above 2.5%, still destroy the world. And here we are, just breaking to the new lows at about 2.15%, getting ready to plunge below 2% later in the year. And eventually, when you have any kind of slight loss of control by the powers that be with these last-to-go markets, you're going to see the Fed come in and join the QE party like it's never been joined before. If you think QE 1, 2, and 3 were big, and keep in mind, they haven't even been doing, theoretically, of course, they've been doing it off balance sheet, but on balance sheet, they haven't been doing QE for 3 years now, and yet they still have the biggest balance sheet in the entire world. That's how much they've done, and that's going to be nothing compared to what they're going to have to do, especially if they want to fund, infrastructure spending and tax cuts, which, of course, will never happen. But the fact is that the Federal Reserve is sitting there just waiting and waiting and praying like they always do for the, as they say in Titanic, the resolution that never comes or whatever it is, because eventually they are going to be forced back into the QE game.
Yeah, we know that for sure. We know it. And what choice do they have? There is no choice. I mean, this is baked in the cake.
Yes, that's the whole point. And again, you know, I try not to use the word Ponzi scheme loosely, because a lot of people just hear that term and they just think, well, it's just
a negative
term to throw at things. But a Ponzi scheme actually means something. It means a system that's based on lies that can only be supported if it gets larger. It has to continually get larger at an exponential rate, and confidence has to be maintained in it, because underneath it, there's nothing there. And that's the whole point. Right. If like the ECB, they talk, we're thinking about slowing down our QE. Well, you've just taken interest rates to pretty much to negative rates in the worst credits in the world. So you think if you stop buying it, that it's going, that nothing, something terrible is not going to happen. There'll be no buyers left. It'll be like a vacuum. And the same thing goes for the Fed. They thought that they could stop because when they stopped officially doing it, they just picked up what they did off balance sheet. And that includes buying stocks. What do you think the dead ringer algorithm I've been writing about for 5 years is in the Dow Jones propaganda average? They buy stocks every day. They buy bonds when they need to. When you see in the last 2 years that you've had massive selling of treasuries by the Japanese, the Chinese, the Saudis, the Russians. Who do you think's buying them? You think it's U.S. retail investors? U.S. retail investors are betting with, as I said, record short positions on the treasuries. They're betting there's going to be interest rate hikes. No, it's the Fed. The Fed buys everything. They print money and they buy everything. They buy stocks. They buy bonds. They naked short gold and silver. And so eventually the Ponzi scheme has to get bigger, because look where we are. The debt has exploded in the process. The economy has collapsed. You've had these gross misallocations that I'm talking about. All of our competitors are having the same kind of problems. There's inflation spreading around the world. Currencies have been collapsing one at a time. So what happens? You need to do more. What do you think? Mm-hmm. They're going to stop? They're going to raise interest rates? I mean, is anyone looking at the plunging existing home sales, new home sales, mortgage applications, retail sales, auto sales, all these things, delinquencies are surging, so they're going to raise interest rates? Yeah, right. I mean, the only reason they even pretend to do these tiny little quarter point increases, and think about it, they've been theoretically raising rates for a year and a half, and they're still under 1%. The only reason they can do that is because they've been goosing the stock market. And they figured as long as we can prevent the stock market from falling, people will think that we're doing some good. Of course, with each successive interest rate hike, even by 0.25%, it kills the economy further. And eventually the stock market has to fall, because when you get to dot-com valuations in the Great Depression era, and the Great Depression is getting worse, eventually something's got to give, whether it's here or somewhere else. And then you throw in all the black swans that are everywhere. I mean, you can't control the fact that Greece defaults, or if Italy votes for the five-star movement, or if Catalonia secedes, or if Trump decides to lob a bomb in North Korea to show his manliness, or any of a million things happening that they can't control. So again, I write today about gold is the ultimate buy and hold, okay, and silver, but we're talking about the lowest inflation-adjusted prices ever. I mean, gold hasn't lost its use. It's still being bought by the major Eastern central banks. There's still no, yes, you could say that Bitcoin has come along and that cryptocurrencies have the potential of having some storage. I mean, actually, it's only Bitcoin that could be a storage of value asset at this point. The other ones are more like dot-com stocks. They're businesses that may or may not succeed. And Bitcoin's a tiny little thing. It's $30 billion in a world sloshing around with, you know, tens of trillions of dollars of investable assets. So the point is, there's not a heck of a lot of choices out there if you want to protect your wealth. And right now, they push gold for the same reasons that the manipulations have caused these gross overvaluations of certain assets. Well, gold and silver are grossly undervalued. And I assure you, they will come back into vogue, just like they were in 2008 and 2011, and every time we've had a crisis throughout history. And once I'm telling you, we're talking about the smallest, tiniest amount of crisis breaks out of financial markets, which has not been allowed for so long, you are going to see a flood of safe haven capital. And where is it going to go? Is it going to race into the dollar? Yeah, it will against emerging market currencies, I guess. But just how much can you race into a dollar when the Federal Reserve is going to be joining the QE party?
Oh, it has to happen. And the concept of the fiat currency is just going to fall by the wayside, I think.
That's the whole point. I mean, that's what we're talking about in our fiat finale.
Yeah.
Last week, where we basically talked about cryptocurrency the whole time. I mean, this is, I wrote earlier this year, in December, I should say, I wrote 2017, there's an article called will be the Year of Monetary Revolution. And, you know, it's funny, even when I wrote that, which was simultaneous with my why Bitcoin will make gold and silver go up, I was thinking more in terms of the whole fiat currency thing in general, as these currencies serially collapse, as they get hyperinflated. I didn't even have an inkling that cryptocurrency could advance this fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about, you can call whatever you want the last few months, but it's definitely on the radar screen compared to where it was 6 months ago. So we're talking about the world is starting to see right in its view, slowly but surely, that there is an alternative out there, a decentralized alternative that goes around governments, which scares the hell out of them. So, you know, between what the governments are going to do in their normal course of hyperinflating and the fact that a new alternative is coming out there aside from gold, you know, there could be a lot of fireworks in the second half of this year.
Oh, yeah. It's almost assured. And not to mention the politically volatile situation, you know, with what's going on there. I mean, forget it, you know?
Politically.
Yeah.
You could say that it's the zeitgeist, things were changing anyway, but it's hard to dispute the fact that Trump has dramatically accelerated the United States' fall from diplomatic grace. It's almost like he's trying to piss people off. And, you know, and Twitter has been, I've talked forever about how the evils of social media, and there are good things about it. Like, for instance, in the Bitcoin world, where there's not a lot of commentary out there, thank God for Twitter, because it's the only way you can listen to what people are saying. But generally speaking, I've said social media is an evil that has far more negatives than positives. And there's no better example in the history of social media than the destruction that Donald Trump has wrought on his brand and on this nation with these tweets. Just on spur of the moment, they're not even edited by the White House, just trashing Germany and China. I mean, this is not how this is the polar opposite of how you should act. Again, I've said all along, there's nothing we can do to stop what's going to happen financially. We need a diplomat. That's why Ron Paul would have been the best possible candidate, because he would speak to people civilly and admit we have things wrong and see how the best way of mitigating the damage. But instead, every politician, of course, just wants to pretend that everything's fine and see if they can manipulate their way to another 4 years. And then eventually you get a guy like this, well, like Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton wanted World War III with Russia because she thought it would make her more popular. And in his case, he just wants to show who's the boss, like he thinks he's on The Apprentice, and I'm just going to yell at everybody. But that's not how you do things, especially when you're the world's biggest debtor.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of debacles coming in the not too distant future, so you need to be ready for it. And no better way to be ready than subscribe to Andy's Daily Missive and his frequent audio blogs over at milesfranklin.com, and go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Subscribe to our newsletter as well. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, and you can tweet us as well, @KerryLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network, where we've got some really entertaining economic news from around the globe. And God, there are so many crazy things going on that you will not be able to stop laughing. I promise you that. From gators taking over South Florida to the elites building
taking
huge
over the
bomb
world.
Shelters, building their huge bunkers, you name it. We cover it, and there's just no shortage. So, Andy, we will hold off till next week. How high will Bitcoin go? Will gold stay above the, what is it, the 200-month, 50-month moving average?
Well, the 200-week moving average is 1239. I mean, it tried to go below and didn't even come close, and now we're well above it. Silver's is in the low 18s. Gold's 5.5-year downtrend line, you know, starting from the big Operation PM Annihilation 1 attack on September 5th, 2011. That's the number that the cartel is far more worried about. That number is around 1285,
right,
somewhere around there. So we're only $20 away from that. And, you know, gold's going to be the one that gets the ball rolling, and silver will follow behind it.
Oh, yeah,
but again,
sure,
you know, gold is has been well above its 200-week moving average now, but for, I don't know, 2 months now, despite the giant smash they put on it a few weeks ago. It never even got below it. And it's closing in on that 200. That, I mean, believe me, there are plenty of technical traders out there looking at that 5.5-year downtrend line, you know, starting from 2011. Then there was they had to protect it in 2013. They had to protect it during the that 2012 European crisis, when Draghi said, "I'll do whatever it takes." They had to protect it during the Brexit last year, and they had to protect it during the election when gold went up right up to the election. And here we are, right up against it again. So believe me, there are plenty of technical people out there who couldn't care less about the fundamentals, staring at that number. And we are only about $20 away at a time where some majorly, majorly scary stuff could break out at any moment.
Correct. Any moment it could be. And that's the scary part, right?
Yep.
That is the scary part. So what are we going to do here, Andy, besides buy Bitcoin and gold and get ready for the great conflagration, right?
And silver. I was right last week silver. About how the gold-silver ratio has never been more overvalued, in my view, ever. I mean, it's come back slightly, but still, it's something like 70, 75 right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the silver supply demand issue is going to become a major thing in the coming years. And I wouldn't be surprised. Look, we had shortages of silver in 2008, 11, 13, and 15. Well, it's now 2017. We are due for one. And I have a feeling that when this one comes, it's not going to be reversed by a bunch of central bank naked shorting.
Yeah, I think you are probably correct, and it's going to happen soon. So let's get ready. Andy, we will talk to you next week. Have a good one.
You too.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.